you have questions about digital photography, you're in the right place. Welcome to Photo Focus. Here's your host, Scott Bourne.
Thank you very much for joining us on the 106th edition of the Photo Focus podcast. I am your host, well, for today anyway, Scott Bourne. This will be my final show as the host of the Photo Focus podcast. Today, I hand over the reins to my good friend and the very capable Rich Harrington. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Scott. Thank you very much for that, and I look forward to continuing the relationship with your audience.
And I will still be on the show from time to time, especially while we're doing the transition. So it's those of you who are applauding at my departure, shut up, because I'll still be here a little while. And we also have somebody else in studio with us, don't we, Rich?
Yeah, we've got Pamela Berry here. Pam, you want to tell folks a little bit about yourself?
Hi, absolutely. I feel honored, Scott. You're a dear friend of mine, and I feel really blessed to be here on your last show. But I am a videographer. That's my first love, and I do my photography, and I think being a photographer helps my video and vice versa. So I'm excited to be here.
Good. And Pam has helped Rich and I on a couple of shoots, and she's a go-getter, and she dresses up real nice. Almost didn't recognize her once during Photoshop World when she came around the corner in a dress, and I was like, who are you?
Great.
Well, we all look a little different when we're out in the field rolling around in the dirt carrying cameras and dust, but yes, some of us look good when we put on dress-up clothes, and some of us just look like a you and I, Scott, so, you know.
I'm glad you said dress-up and not dress.
We suck less. That's our goal.
Yes.
Rich, I understand you participated in a Google Plus Hangout. Let's start a show with that today.
Yeah, last night I participated in Jan Kabili's Photoshop show as a Google Plus Hangout, and I had done some Hangouts with people before, but never as part of an organized show, and I was just amazed by the really great camaraderie people had, the questions, the interactivity. I did a little screen sharing demo. People were asking interactive questions. It was fun. It was I found it really invigorating. I started down a path of showing people how to do some non-destructive adjustments in Photoshop, and people asked some great questions, and it just led to, you know, creativity feeding upon creativity. In fact, one of the things I built in the show, I was really quite happy with the end result of this composite image I was building. It was sort of community sourced. People were asking questions and wanted to see things, and at the end, I kind of felt like it was almost a group effort to make this. And, you know, sometimes group efforts turn out, sometimes they don't. But it was just a really interesting community. I know, Pam, you've actually participated in some Google Plus Hangouts. For those who maybe haven't tried these before, what's the experience like?
It's fascinating. For one, you're obviously meeting people from all over the world, but you all have the same passion and same drive for what you're doing. And there are people who are accountants or moms or, you have grocery store managers who have this love for photography, and they're sitting down, and a lot of times some of the Google Hangouts, we have a specific topic that we go through and we learn about, we ask questions, we share each other's work, we say what we love about it, and we ask each other questions. And I've even hosted a few video Google Hangouts.
Yeah, this one was video, but yeah, you nailed it. You were able to put pictures up for people to see, mm-hmm. or you could screencast what you had on your screen. You know, I know, Scott, a lot of people have concerns about posting images to Google, but you have the ability to actually just share your screen temporarily, so you're streaming it, but it never gets stored on Google's servers. And I'm hoping that bypasses some of the Google gobbling that sometimes happens. But you'll probably tell me I'm wrong there because it crossed
the
server.
No, it's okay. Here's the thing. I mean, I've written a lot about this, and that, of course, translates to then therefore I have been misrepresented and misquoted a lot about this. But my only concern about Google Plus, my single solitary concern, is that if you are someone who does exclusive licensing of your images – and you do that for a living, which means it's going to be some very small portion of our audience, then you might want to carefully read the terms of service at Google Plus, because it is, in my attorney's opinion, not mine, and I pay him a lot of money, so I'm going to listen to him, that posting an image on Google Plus obviates your ability to exclusively license a photograph. That's going to be a tiny percentage of our audience. So other than that, I have no problem. I never said that Google steals your copyrights, even though that's a popular meme on the internets and the interwebs. I never said it. Nobody can ever show you a place where I said it because it didn't happen. But I did say that it might not be a place for photographers if they're interested in doing exclusive licensing. Now, that all said, I have recently embarked upon what I am calling the Trey Ratcliffe experiment. And the album version will be the Trey Ratcliffe Experience. It'll feature cover songs. Oh, no, just kidding. What I'm moving towards doing is trying the Creative Commons approach that Trey does. Trey challenged me. He said, look, you know, we disclosed some stuff to each other, had a private conversation. We're making similar money. And I said, well, how do you know you wouldn't make more if you exclusively licensed your images? And he said, well, how do you know you wouldn't make more if you opened up your images? So that hit me like a sledgehammer. And I said, you know what? I'm an old dog, but I can still learn new tricks. So I'm going to give it a try for a year. And I'm going to compare income at the end of the year to income for the year previous and see if this helps or hurts my ability to earn income. So far, I don't have any data to really say, other than a lot of people are surprised to see me doing it. But so therefore, my position on Google Plus is even less important now, because since I'm no longer trying, at least this year, to do exclusive licenses, I don't have a problem with putting stuff up there. And I have played around. I don't know. I got 2,000 or 3,000 people who have circled me, whatever that means. I generally take that to mean they are in wagons shooting arrows at me. But I don't really understand exactly everything about it. I have never done a Hangout, for instance.
Well, we need to change that.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll schedule one and try it. Although everyone had a good laugh at me last night. I was like, what's the dog button do? And you click this thing, and it basically tracks your face, and it starts putting animal faces over your face while you're on a video chat. I'm like, some engineer has too much time. They can't figure out how to keep this thing from crashing, but they could attach a cat mask to my face. So as your head, it moves around. I'm like, this is just weird.
I did sort of watch one that Trey did around Christmas, and some beautiful young woman from Canada had reindeer hair. Horns on her.
And you can change them out, yeah.
Yeah.
One of my favorite Hangouts is I was editing something and I put it live and I shared screen and I got advice and help and questions asked, and it was absolutely fun, and I was thrilled with being able to do something like that.
Well, I think what we should do, Scott, and let's see if actually people, you know, post in on this or have interest, but maybe a fun thing we could try is on an episode sometime coming up, we could do maybe a critique session, or we could try some, you know, interactive learning where the audience is driving it. You know, it's tough because you got to make time and schedule it. But I was just amazed at the community, and it was nice. As Pamela mentioned, getting people from different walks of life, you know, it's always nice. I mean, we had people from Greece. We had people from international audiences that I never would cross paths with in a conference, and to just get questions and different perspectives was very invigorating, and I think we're all better for it.
I'm all for trying anything, so, you know, Great. Let's go. Let's bring it on.
Well, speaking of trying things, you've had an iPad 3 in your hands for a couple of days. What'd you think?
Well, I ordered mine in advance, and then I heard this horrible news that those who ordered in advance were going to get screwed, and they wouldn't come on the day that they arrived at stores, but it did arrive at the UPS store. We ordered a bunch for the staff, and I got one and put it in my hands. And first blush was, you know, it wasn't like terribly different, but then the screen went and sort of reached out and grabbed my nose and tweaked it a little bit, and I realized that it was much higher resolution.
And you can cook on it.
Yeah. Mine doesn't get all that hot. I don't know. I haven't used it.
It's only if you play games on it. Some of the real processor-intensive games, it starts getting up into like 110 degrees. But yeah, the screen was the big reason that many of us were looking at it. And, you know, can you see a difference?
I can absolutely see a difference. It's not something that requires a spectrometer to figure out. I mean, it's clearly brighter, it's clearly sharper, and the pictures look really good. They look good before, but they look even better.
My understanding is it's four times better. There's four times more images on the same size screen.
Yeah, it's well done. And now the thing is, though, I mean, I'm a little different from most people when it comes to the iPad. I don't use the iPad to create content. I use it to consume content. Right when it first came out, I wrote that that's what I thought it was best at. I still think it's best at that. So I primarily read iBooks, eBooks, and use it to show my portfolio. That's the predominant use for my iBook, or for my iPad. I use my MacBook Air when I want to do any kind of creative stuff. But so far so good. And I think, you know, if you're a photographer and you want a quick and easy way to shore your portfolio, any iPad, 1, 2, or 3 is a great way to do it, 3 being the best. And, you know, Rich, in the old days, we passed around a book.
Yeah. And you got splinters, too.
Yeah, we hand a book to people, and they would control the experience of looking at your pictures. And then I noticed when we went to computers, we controlled the experience of showing people our pictures. And now when I hand someone an iPad to look at my portfolio, they're in control. They look at each picture that they're interested in as long as they want, not as long as I want. They pinch, they zoom, they move around at their will. And I've noticed that that becomes a much better experience for them. So it's back to more of a tactile thing. So that's my very favorite thing about it.
Is there a couple of versions of it?
There's different sizes, yeah. So you got different storage capacity. And the 4G connection's nice. I've tried the faster internet connection and using some of the photo hosting solutions that tie in. It's nice. You know, if you do have your portfolio online and you need to call something up, obviously you could sync with it. I don't want to say disagree with you, but I'm starting to have new thoughts about using it as a content creation tool. Previously, I'd played with apps like Snapseed and Tiffin and their tools, and they were great for touching up images. But now this thing has a 5-megapixel camera on it, and Photoshop Touch, awesome. The new iPhoto, same thing.
Rich.
Yeah.
it's like, have you seen people wandering around the Mandalay Bay using their iPad as a camera? It looks ridiculous.
I know it looks ridiculous.
Drop a dart cloth over yourself and you could be doing a Matthew Brady imitation.
Yes. But let's talk more about using – I like the camera now because I've fallen in love with this app called iStop Motion that can record time lapse. And so you could set your iPad up and roll a simple time lapse if you want to. But the new iPhoto, they sold 1 million copies of that thing in 10 days. And it's really good. The new Photoshop Touch, same thing. It's right up there with copies sold.
They sold 3 million iPads in 10 days. And Apple stock topped $600.
Yeah. Well, you know they're going to go out of business anytime now. They're just waiting to fail.
I'll just point out that for all of those that the audience think I'm a business wizard, I sold at $200. So I was dollar cost averaged at $47, so I did okay, but still.
Yeah. Well, so everybody's probably sick of the iPad. They've heard a lot about it by now. But obviously, some other new stuff coming out. Pamela and both you, Scott, got your hands on one of the 5D Mark IIIs, didn't you?
Well, kind of, sort of.
Pamela's had some hands-on time, so she's got some well-formed opinions from 1 hour of use.
Well, I know, it was only 1 hour, but the regional Canon rep, we went out to dinner, and he all of a sudden, he's like, hey, look what I have. And oh my goodness, I about jumped out of my seat and was able to play for it for about an hour, and I was very, very impressed. Of all the new cameras coming out, that was the most fun I've ever had holding a new camera.
And one of the things that you mentioned stood out to me when we were talking before the show was really good low light ISO sensitivity.
Absolutely. At 25,000, it looks more like a 1600 ISO on a lot of pictures.
Not that we shouldn't have good lenses or occasionally use lights, but there are situations like that. I mean, Scott, you sometimes need to rely on ISO for some of the real fast stuff you're doing, don't you?
Yeah, but you know, I got a post going up tomorrow called "The Religion of Low Light," and I got to tell you, I've been through all the various photo religions. At first, it was, you know, do you use filters? Then it was, have you switched to digital? Then it was, I got the most megapixels, and now it's, oh, what's it like in low light? I can promise you that every camera that comes out from here on out, whether it's $100 point and shoot or $1 million version of the Hubble telescope, the very first email question I get about it is, what's it like in low light? As if that's all that matters.
True.
That is true. And some of the other features, it's a lot faster. It's definitely geared more towards like concert photography and sports action that the 5D couldn't really handle as much.
But the thing that stood out to me when you told me, which seems surprising, the body is smaller than before. So all these people who are used to shooting with the 5D have to move their hands in a little bit.
But it's very comfortable.
It's more the size of a 7D.
It's definitely more the size of a 7D. It feels just like my 7D. When I picked it up, this is the new camera.
So what do you think?
I have 20 minutes experience with it. I would have had one in my hand right now that I would have owned if not for a screw-up that I'm not going to discuss. But at 8 a.m. tomorrow, I will have one of my very own that I will get to keep. And I'm taking to Alaska to test out.
Can you post some images? I'd love to see what you do with it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is...
Notice I said what you do with it, not what the camera does.
6 frames a second is really interesting to me because, you know, typically these cameras haven't had that kind of frame rate, and that's starting to get fast enough that a wildlife photographer, a sports photographer, might be able to make that work. And, you know, Canon claims 2 stops of low light improvement. I see one myself based on my 20-minute test. I think, you know, Nikon still has a very slight edge in the low light improvement, but there's no question that the 5D Mark III has been designed to shoot video on as opposed to the 5D Mark II, which where it was an afterthought. They really, I mean, now we've got a mic jack, we can control audio levels, we got the ability to bring 1080 out.
So in
those regards, it's much nicer.
Well, it wasn't just controlling audio levels. The big thing that was missing before was the ability to hear the audio while you're recording. And a lot of folks don't understand why that's so important. But, you know, if you can't hear what you're recording, it's only after the fact that you discover it sucked.
Yeah. Well, not only can you hear it, but on the display screen, you can also see your levels.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've got SMPTE time code.
Mm-hmm.
And so for folks who want to know what that is, basically, imagine if you were on a shoot and you had a bunch of different cameras, you were covering something with multiple cameras at once. This makes it easier to line up multiple tracks together. Or if you were giving the video for someone to review, it would be a unique number for every single frame. So somebody can give you feedback, like, I really like this shot from this point in time to this point in time. So those are two things that turn the camera from being a toy in some people's minds to being production ready. So it's interesting, and there's a lot of enthusiasm on this. I was actually just up in New York speaking at a camera store, and they were having a 2-day workshop on DSLR video, and we had a lot of people come in, and the room was evenly split between video people and photography people. And it's amazing the cross-pollination that this is bringing. But while I was there, the same question came up time and time again was lenses. People seem really confused about aperture, about should I buy the L series? Why do I need a prime? All these things. I know, Scott, you've done a lot of writing over the Photo Focus site on helping people sort of demystify lenses. But for the people at home sitting there saying, do I buy now? Do I wait? Could you maybe give some advice on why it's better to hold off a bit and get the better lens than it is to just rush out and buy something right away or to buy something without trying it?
Well, Rich, I'm glad to do that, but I first need to step in and say that if you're interested in that 5D Mark III, you might want to rent it before you buy it at our good friends at BorrowLenses.com because they got a bunch of them. And they've already shipped out the first shipment of cameras. So all the new cameras coming out, the D800, the D4, the 1DX, the 5D Mark III, all the new flashes, lenses, et cetera, will be available at BorrowLenses.com. You can reach them at BorrowLenses.com or click the banner on the Photo Focus homepage. I also want to take a moment to say thank you to Animoto. It's a great way to share your work in slideshows that you don't have to build. You upload pictures, you pick music, and some kind of very special magical fairy works in the background to give you a slideshow. So that's all happening there at Animoto.com. We appreciate their support of the Photo Focus podcast.
Can I throw in, Scott, on Animoto? I discovered those guys a long time ago at South by Southwest, like when they first came out. Their stuff is great. I mean, you know, if for those of you who never tried it, who just hear slideshow, this stuff is closer to a music video than a slideshow. And you can just remix it as many times as you want. It's great tech. It's really exciting.
Now, as to the lens question, when we're talking about these new high-res cameras, I'm going to get a little technical now. Some of them have the ability to resolve more horizontal line pairs than the lenses can deliver. So that's why you want the top-of-the-line glass, Nikon or Canon, for the high-res cameras, particularly the L glass, for instance, for the Canon shooters. Because if you don't get into the L glass, the camera's resolution is really, you can't really take advantage of it. And the other thing is that these the fast lenses, while you may not need to shoot at 1.8, the fact is the sweet spot of a 1.8 lens is somewhere around f4 to f5.6, where you might spend a lot of time, meaning that's the sharpest part of the lens. And the faster the lens, the wider the aperture is at the sweet spot, which is extremely important for both video and still. So my advice to people is do not spend money on bodies. Spend money upgrading glass, because the great thing is the glass stays the same and the bodies change all the time.
Absolutely. That's what I would tell when I worked at a camera store, and people would ask about that. And I, you know, glass is going to last you a lifetime. It really is, especially if you take care of it.
Unless you're like my friend Rob, whose three-year-old daughter dropped a brand new compact prime lens right from her hands to the kitchen floor and shattered it. So that was a very sad trip to Zeiss. But
and invest in filters.
Filters are good, and maybe padded cases if you have small children.
Now it's called insurance.
That's true too. Now, Scott, you did mention earlier the ability for people to rent lenses from Borrow Lenses. That is something that I've found personally really helpful, because a lot of times if you're comparing lenses, I think it's going to be a matter of personal choice. Many lenses have the buttons in different positions. You're going to find different options. You know, people are always a little confused about, well, what about these, you know, these non-manufacturer lenses, the OEM lenses or third-party lenses? You know, I think, you know, like, for example, I really like the Tokina wide-angle lenses. I never would have tried them had I not had a chance to try a friend. I would have just stuck with Nikon. And I think that this is a great way to safely experiment and try some other things out. What are some of the favorite lenses you've tried out recently? Or, you know, do you have any good suggestions there for people thinking of renting, what they could try?
Well, I mean, I have lots of favorite lenses. For me, the brand new Canon and Nikon 70-200s are workhorses. They're just incredible. I'm heading out the day we're recording this show, the day after, I'm heading out for Alaska to do another Eagle trip. And last year I looked at my shots and my EXIF data, and 80% of my shots were done with the 70-200 because the Eagles are unbelievably close. And those lenses are just killer sharp for zooms. I'm not usually a zoom guy, I prefer primes, but in the case of the 70-200s, they're pretty nice. I'm actually, Borrow Lenses is sending me a D4 to try out, along with the 300F2 Nikon lens, which is not one I would normally buy. So I'll be trying that out for the Eagle shoot. I like big long lenses because I do a lot of outdoor stuff. So, for instance, I own the Sigma 300-800F56 and the Canon 800F56. Unfortunately, Nikon does not make an 800 millimeter lens as we speak, but Nikon does make a 200-400. Canon's promised one. So there's different lenses for different systems, but it really all just depends on what you're doing. I happen to be a big fan of the Olympus EP3. And their new 12 and 45 millimeter lenses are sweet.
How about you, Pam? You've had a lot of chance to play with some different lenses. And anything you've heard about stuff coming up or that you're excited about?
I'm excited for the new 70-200. I've heard a lot of great things about it. I've heard of the improved glass that they're going to have. And I'm thinking with these lens upgrades that in the future there's something big, because I think they need the lenses that are going to be able to handle it.
Great. And Scott, I'm actually, so you've got the D4 coming in tomorrow. I've had a D800 coming in tomorrow. I think we're going to have some good stuff on upcoming shows to talk about what it's like shooting with
Wait a minute. You've got a D800 coming in tomorrow?
Yes.
How did you arrange to get a D800 before I arranged to get a D800?
Nikon.
There's a rule against that.
I know. I was really shocked. No, Nikon called me and they said,
Bill Doosan, Scott Doosan.
No, not Scott, somebody else. They're like, we'd like you to look at the video features, and we'd love your opinion, and if you could tell people what you think after you get a chance. I'm like, okay, send one over. So
I just want you to know that's wrong.
I'm sorry. I'm going to have it at NAB, though, so we can go out in the desert and shoot.
Okay. Well, I am very interested in trying to figure out how you cram 36 megapixels onto a sensor that used to hold 12 and call that good, but...
I'm gonna do some tests, and I will let you know. And I'm how do I put this? I'm skeptical and optimistic at the same time. It's either going to be a tremendous success or a giant car crash. So we'll see what happens.
I'm excited to watch this.
I'm going to tell you right now, physics are physics, and so I have extreme doubts about this camera. And of course, that will immediately brand me as a Nikon hater, despite the fact that I currently have 5D3s.
I was going to say, I've seen your gear closet. You are not a Nikon hater. So,
but the thing is if they make a mistake, they make a mistake. I think on paper it looks like a mistake. I have said over and over, and I will do it. I need to test the lens, but I am most doubtful of the D800 of all the new bodies and everything that's coming out. I'm most hopeful for the 5D Mark III, the D4, and the 1DX. I am most doubtful of the D800, but we'll see what happens.
Speaking of new things coming out, we just had the release of the Photoshop CS6 public beta. So Photoshop's giving a sneak peek, letting people see this. And there's lots of cool things. There's already been videos online, but one of the most interesting videos that was online that got people really curious, they showed a video, a fashion video, of different of these women walking for like a clothing store. Well, it turns out our friend Vincent LaFerrée actually shot that, but the whole thing, motion graphics, editing, color grading, all of it is cut in the new version of Photoshop, which is now in people's hands. So I actually got a chance to work with the team on the development of this feature. I've been dying to talk about it because obviously it's in my wheelhouse, but I before I open my mouth and gush, I'm just curious what you guys think about having, you know, we had video before in Photoshop, but now they rolled in that same Mercury engine that's Premiere. It's real-time performance. What do you think about real-time video editing in Photoshop with a nice, simple timeline that's about as complex as the original iMovie so beginners can use it?
I think it makes perfect sense. With the two worlds of photo and video collaborating as it is, it makes sense that photographers have something they're familiar with to edit their new venture into video.
What do you think, Scott? Would you use it?
I'm very excited about it. I mean, it has to be designed for dumb people for me to use it, but assuming that I can make it work, I'm very excited about it because most of what my video editing needs to be is, you know, trimming the front and back off of the video and color grading it and dropping it in. So for the stuff that I do, it sounds like it may be perfect. And one of the things you and I have both talked about, Rich, is that around the world there are, you know, all sorts of trillions of terabytes of videos sitting on people's hard drives now that these cameras shoot video and they're like picking their nose. They don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
This could change that. Now, Aperture's had some video edit capabilities. I hope that Aperture's new version, which we both think could come any day, will have more video editing. Because, I mean, despite the people that don't like the fact that these cameras do video, it's happening, so get over it. And it's nice to have some features to work with. So I'm looking forward to playing with it. I will play with it as soon as I get back from Alaska.
Yeah.
And try it out.
Well, here's the great thing, too. It's not just for editing video. If you want to do an animated slideshow in there, you could drop in slideshows, cut it to music, and put the simple zooms and pans on the pictures like you used to. So it's great for doing either fusion projects where you're mixing video and stills together or doing all just photos and music together. So I'm hoping it'll appeal to a lot of folks. They built the Adobe Media Encoder right in so you could publish right out of Photoshop with easy presets for things like YouTube and Vimeo or to Blu-ray disk the files that you're going to need for that. So it gives you all the encoded video files that you need to either post to the web or drop in an authoring application. Probably the biggest thing, though, is like, see, a lot of people didn't know that Photoshop had video before, that you could bring in a video file and tweak it, because it was only in Photoshop Extended, which most people right. didn't have unless you were a scientist or something of that nature. You bought the Production Premium Collection. Not anymore. They put it in the regular Photoshop. The team sort of decided that, oh, everybody is interested in video, so let's make it in the everybody's version of Photoshop.
Well, we're going to have a lot more Photoshop coverage now here at Photo Focus than we have in the past because while Rich is every bit the Aperture expert I am, I've always had an Aperture bias. Rich has a very deep knowledge of Photoshop, so we're going to add some Photoshop stuff to what we're doing with Aperture. Before we go on, Rich, I do want to mention a couple of things, a few items of business. First of all, know that the PhotoFocus.com site is going nowhere. It's been published since November 2nd, 1998. We'll continue every day that I am alive. We post there 7 days a week, 365 days a year. It's free, always will be as long as I'm part of it. And you can get news, reviews, information you can use at photofocus.com 7 days a week. If you have questions for us or you have comments about the show, you can send them to photofocus@me. That's M like Mary, E like Edward.com. And we also want to say thanks to SmugMug, professional photo sharing, one of our sponsors. If you sell photos online, you want to share photos online, or if you're looking for what, in is my opinion, the best place to host videos online, SmugMug's your answer. And also to my friends at ViewBug, where, by the way, if you do a Google search for ViewBug Photo Focus Contest, you'll find out that there's a chance for you to win more than 10,000 $1,000 worth of stuff in our new photo contest at ViewBug. That's at ViewBug.com. We appreciate them being a part of the show. Rich, we should also mention that the show is going to continue.
Yep.
It's going to be just like it always has been, the 5th, the 15th, and the 25th of every month, but we are moving the feed.
Yep, the feed has been switched on over to Libsyn, but it's already been submitted to the iTunes store. There'll be a link on the Photo Focus website, or if you just go back to iTunes and resubscribe. So those of you listening to this episode, which is the last episode on the old feed, just go back to iTunes in about a week or so and go ahead and look for the new feed and subscribe. You'll start seeing new episodes in there, or you can always head on over to photofocus.com where you can subscribe there to the new feed. That'd be great. Tell your friends, tell your family. We're going to keep the good stuff in the show. We've got a couple other new things we're going to add. We'll have some new guests on from time to time, as well as some interviews with folks in the industry. But I'm very excited, Scott, to get the chance to continue a great show. And we always look forward to having you back on. I'm sure we're going to talk you into it at least a few times, eh?
Well, I'll be on all the next month at least while we get the transition done. I do want to mention that you'll be able to also find the new RSS feed into the iTunes store via the Twitter stream. We have two of them, twitter.com/photofocus, which is nothing but PhotoFocus posts. So there we will publish the new iTunes feed. And you can also follow me on Twitter, Scott Bourne, all one word, S-C-O-T-T-B-O-U-R-N-E. I will publish it there. It'll be published on the PhotoFocus site. It'll be listed in the podcast. So there's no excuse for not finding the show and following the show. We're just moving it over, making a few changes. Rich will be in charge from here on out. And then I think you're going to like it. We originally had considered maybe, you know, mothballing the show just because I wasn't sure that there was anything else to talk about. But bringing you on, that helps. And, of course, having special guests like we had Pam stop by today. And if you're at NAB, come and see Pam and Rich and I and all that kind of good stuff. We're going to wrap this one up, Rich, because we got a hard out tonight.
Yep.
I do appreciate you taking over the show. And you and I have been friends a long time. We've talked together at Macworld, NAB, all kinds of places. You're like the best guy I can think of to do this. So I'm honored and privileged that you're going to take over the reins.
Well, I truly appreciate the honor of taking it over, Scott. So, and this is a great audience, and I'm really excited that we're going to get a chance to talk about new things and keep the tradition going.
Pam, where can people find you when you're not visiting us here at Photo Focus?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter. It's Pamela Annberry, PamelaAnnBerry. And that's where I'm at, making some snarky comments usually.
And Rich?
You could find me on social media under Red Pixel, RHEDPIXEL, or my personal blog at Richard Harrington Blog.
And you can follow me again on Scott Bourne. So this, for the 106th and final time, is my sign-off. Go out there and make pictures. Don't just take pictures. We'll see you on the next Photo Focus.